With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You may already know that the Football Ramble have teamed up with audible.co.uk. to offer you a free audiobook of your choosing when you sign up for a free 1 month trial at audible.co.uk/footballramble. So if you want Why England Lose by Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I Partridge by Alan Partridge, or The Football Men, Up Close with the Giants of the Modern Game by Simon Cooper, then sign up at audible.co.uk/footballramble, or choose from a range of about 60,000 other titles. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep, whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up now.
Oh, fuck it! The championships are underway and this is the Football Ramble and you're all under arrest. My name's Marcus and I've got Jim with me.
Hello.
Pete.
Hiya.
Luke.
All right.
That's right, they're all here. I haven't subbed any of them in. Let's start with, what's been your favourite moment from the first round of the first stage of the group games of the European Championship 2012? Oh, I'm all excited. We're well underway.
Very formal.
Jim.
Very formal excitement. At least I now know what tournament you're referring to.
Euro 2012, Jim.
My favourite moment of the first opening round of games has been the incredible performance from one Andre Arshavin. I was delighted to see that. The effort he put in for Russia against the Czech Republic. He was everywhere.
Not for your beloved Arsenal.
No,
done that for a while.
Oh, to be fair to Arshavin, he was played for the middle, wasn't he? Which is, you know, his favoured position always has been.
Indeed. And he's had a haircut.
He has had a haircut. Yeah, it looks like he's aged to Arsenal, doesn't he? It really does.
He looks like he really... I know we've seen him play for Russia before and he's done this before and he's, you know, he's been on those anyway, but he does genuinely look like he really enjoys playing for Russia. He's the main man there. He loves... I think he also really relishes... helping out the younger players and really helping them, you know, that sort
definitely
of thing.
And Russia's performance in general was a highlight. They look like the Russia of old, and we'll be coming on to that.
The USSR.
Not anymore.
Pete.
I will go for the 3-5-2 of Italy.
Oh yes.
Even when the chips were down, even when they were on the back foot, they did not go, oh my god, let's just panic. It looked really good. They really packed the midfield and it was really enjoyable to see. And obviously Di Natale as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. We'll be certainly.
That's both of mine. So
picking the bones out of that one. Luke.
Up yours, Luke.
Well, they were. That was both of mine. But I was going to go more specifically for Daniel De Rossi. Our prayers were answered, Marcus.
Yes.
The thing we dreamed about, not together, separately, for the last 3 or 4 months has come true. De Rossi, after playing a couple of times for Roma at sweeper, has sweepered up the Italian defence.
He looked a little bit wobbly at times.
Yeah, I love the fact that he also was trying to play a little bit of offside every so often, not as a sweeper, son.
Yeah, that's it. That's not what you're there for.
And also, he was wearing one long sleeve and one short sleeve, which is very strange.
And had a bit of a wild man beard.
Yeah.
He was ready for the Spanish.
Because the Spanish were so tiny as well, it made him look like an absolute colossus, like a big giant man.
And also, my theory around the one short sleeve, one long sleeve thing is, Prandelli's obviously said to them, look, we're playing three at the back, we're going to confuse them as much as we can, so grow a beard, get one sleeve long, one sleeve short. They don't know what the hell's going on. And it sort of works.
Yeah, well, again, we'll talk about that in due course. I'm going to go for England's discipline. It was there. It's the progress I wanted, Marcus. Hellfire. We're going to give out the points. You confuse me, Pete and Luke, with the whole Italy thing. So for the first time ever, I'm going to give you both the points.
Oh, thanks.
Oh.
Point share.
So Euros, new rules.
Yeah.
One thing that definitely
was. It's an Italian loving, basically.
The one thing that definitely was at my highlight was the fact that we appear to have taken a backward step. I know it's not FIFA, it's UEFA.
I know what you're going to say.
No ball on a pedestal.
Yeah.
No, get the ball off the pedestal and say it's game time.
It doesn't matter what happens for the rest of the tournament, it's probably been a failure.
Yeah,
tainted.
That's annoying. If you listen to UEFA, get that sorted. I love that bit.
There has been some good violence, though. So, you know, swings and red.
Not from us as well. Country's gone to the dogs. We're going to start with England versus France, and ended 1-1. And England did look very disciplined. It was perhaps the performance that we realistically hoped for.
We got our 10 minutes.
I think it was nine minutes
between the goals.
That's right. Yeah, but England started, you know, pretty relaxed, pretty confident. A couple of banks of four that worked quite well.
Yeah, well, that's what we were expecting, wasn't it? They played in the way we expected, but just with more success, I suppose. Really, and I was very impressed with the discipline of Gerrard as well. A lot of people have spoken about his sort of Royal Rovers antics, us included, and he put in a real captain's performance, a real shift.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I know Gerrard's not been great in an England shirt, and we've talked about that before, and many people have, but I'd say that was one of his best performances for England.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think going into the game, we mentioned it on the last show, and I mentioned it a bit on Twitter, on the Football Ramble Twitter account as well. The two key areas were Gerrard's discipline and John Terry at that right centre back position. I think they both
Terry did very well as well.
Both Terry looked so solid.
Yeah, what he did very well is, I mean, you need to take into account the heat as well. He looked very hot there. Roy Hodgson had a real bead on before the game started. But what they did do well is, like, as you said, Marcus, had these two banks of four, but they picked their tackles very well. They picked when to nick the ball and when not to.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a few mistakes. They gave a few free kicks away, on the whole,
it's 90 minutes of football.
It was fine. Yeah. And the good thing was, again, the transitional play, because you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain and Young and Welbeck with a bit of pace, you can really hit them.
Yeah. Welbeck was another that really shone.
Yeah, well, he worked really, really hard. He was sort of fulfilling that Drogba in the Champions League final.
Left wing back in front of the fullback.
Yeah, but also, like, the Ox looked really excitable. And probably one of our few creative outlets. If we weren't pulled offside every 5 minutes, you know, we might have got nicked a couple of goals.
Yeah, the linesman was a bit generous with a couple of decisions.
What do you think of the referee then? Because the ITV were obviously pursuing a sort of anti-referee agenda, but we all watched the game together. I mean, there was a few dodgy decisions, but I don't think we really picked up.
I think two bad decisions really stand out, which is when Gerrard was fouled on the box and when Glenn Johnson was just barged off the ball by Frank Ribery on the right wing.
For the Gerrard decision, though, I think his reputation preceded him.
I agree with you.
Was that referee Rizzoli? The Italian, it was, wasn't it? Because I think he refereed the Milan derby, the 4-2 recently. I remember him doing alright in that game, particularly.
Well, you know, peaks and troughs. But look, two or three little free kick decisions.
If you're missing open goals, you can't be complaining about
it. Well, that's it. England, I mean, they, as we thought, they soaked up the pressure quite nicely.
Looked very comfortable doing it, which is something they've often not been comfortable with.
Well, we talked about other teams' defences, you know, and we will obviously come onto them when we go through our roundup of round one of the games. But England's defence looked very good. Okay, well, as you say, once or twice maybe, but
some of Glenn Johnson's covering was very good.
Yeah, yeah. Glenn Johnson,
I think Terry sort of lunged in, and I think it was down to him to cover. And he did.
And he did.
Well, Glenn Johnson's recovery pace is superb. Yeah. I think it's just his other parts of his game aren't that great.
And it was heartening to see when we went down to 1-1, we brought on a couple of offensive players rather than sort of trying to stifle the midfield a little bit, which you'd expect them to do, which kind of gives, like, psychologically the other team something to think about rather than just sort of packing it. Well, let's get out wide.
We were getting a bit bogged down, weren't we? And I think that was the right thing to do. I mean, the thing we've talked about quite a lot on this show, I mean, over the years, we've talked quite at length, really, about Samuel and Lucio, and used them as an example, and
that's
said
that
you can defend deep if you want without panicking. Just because you're defending deep doesn't mean you're panicking, you're inviting everything onto you, and you're going to lose the game. It's like a last resort. What it can mean is you're comfortable with the ball at your feet quite close to the goal, and you can use it properly. And as you said, actually, Marcus, halfway through the game, I think it was you said, you know, they're losing the ball occasionally, maybe 10 or 15 yards into their own half, but at least not lumping it into the corner and fighting pressure back on them, because psychologically that's very demanding.
There was a period where they started to do that, and that was when Hodgson made the changes, so it was almost as if he was aware that this sort of this kind of default setting had crept back in, so that's when he shifted things up a little.
As you said, Jim, you know, I was like, oh, what are they doing? And you just went, England are back.
When Hart has such a great performance, because he is quite a commanding goalkeeper, it kind of, when the actual goal went in for France, he sort of thought, oh, I thought he could have done a little bit better with that because, you know, it was on the right-hand side of the goal.
He made an excellent save just before that, from the header. To be fair to Hart, though, I mean, Sam Enasri's shot did come through a sort of a forest of legs. You know, it was
I think Ribéry did that on purpose. You watch Ribéry's
move. He's intelligent enough to do it.
You see the way he positions himself. He looks almost like he's doing that on purpose.
But I thought Gerrard and Parker gave the defence a lot of protection. And what I thought they did really well was they invited it on, and the tackling I thought was great at times, and they would just nick the ball and they were away. And in the first half, you know, Milner was sent through and rounded the keeper and missed. But a couple of times, you know, just when we got the ball in between France's midfield and defence, you know, we looked quite likely.
Mm. We found, I mean, listen, there were gaps between their defence and midfield, which we found quite readily.
Yeah,
we found those more readily than I sort of anticipated, and more readily than I thought France would give up. And, you know, let's get it in perspective. It's a very hot day, or hot evening, and France are the strongest team in the group. If we want to progress, we're going to face stronger teams. But, you know, it's the first competitive international Roy Hodgson's ever managed.
So, and a lot of those players, it's their first match at a tournament.
Yeah,
slow pitch as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I think actually played into our hands. I think that, you know, the heat and obviously the grass did look a little bit long, and it slowed the game down a little, which certainly benefited England.
Gives us time to sort of regroup and that.
Absolutely,
sort of
yeah.
Lescott opening his account
with
an English goal. What a ball it was in from Gerrard.
Yes, absolutely superb.
Lescott found himself in a great position, and
he just sort of stepped forward and was away from his
let
marker.
The ball hit off his head.
Diarra just wasn't bothered, was he?
No.
It's so interesting because Diarra I've seen in the past, and he was at times this game as well. It's such a threat attacking set pieces.
Yeah.
He
forced a very good save out of Joe Hart, and then we were quite lucky that
Lescott
he missed the follow up. Yeah,
for the goal.
But he's 20 times bigger than any other player on the field. Yeah. Diarra, for some reason.
That's why I was screaming at Young and Oxlade Chamberlain when they found themselves a couple of occasions. It didn't happen very often, but a couple of occasions on the break.
Yeah,
lump it 15 yards past him and leg it round him. He's rangy, but he's not rapid. Mm. You know, and Oxlade Chamberlain would have him on toast if he did that. But maybe it's the pitch and the fact that Oxlade Chamberlain is inexperienced.
I think you know you didn't really see the raw pace of either of those players again, possibly because of the pitch and the conditions. So
But also though you've got to remember. But it's the first game of the tournament. You know, there's been a lot of talk about
great start.
It was a great start. First game of the tournament,
and we've never won before.
Yeah,
in the Euros,
exactly. The you know, you're playing against the best team in the group, really, and a team that people say could go out the first round, could win it. Well, if you're saying a team could win it, then they're decent.
Yeah,
and they've got two of the most wonderful attacking players that Europe have to offer in Benzema and Ribéry, and Nasri could argue as well.
Well, a ridiculous goal from Nasri, so good.
Oh yeah,
so good.
I mean,
it's one of those you've just got to accept you're going to concede goals like that sometimes. It's a moment of magic.
So you've got all those things into consideration. It's a hot day, as you say, one thing and another. And so Oxlade-Chamberlain, the thought of whacking it past the fullback and legging 10, 20 yards or whatever, it might not be the first thought in their mind.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And especially as you've got a goal up, let's take it easy. And then one all, let's not be silly here. So you take that confidence and Hodgson will say, right, that was excellent. Take a lot of positives. Now what are we going to do for the next game? Let's keep the shape.
Yeah.
Keep that shape and keep the discipline, but against Sweden you'll have a little bit more joy and go and express yourselves just that bit more and you grow into the tournament.
Yeah, well they were rattled after the goal for a good 5-10 minute spell. They, as we were saying, it was like the old England were back and they were sort of lumping balls and making sort of rash decisions, not really thinking about what they were doing. Yeah, but they banished it, you know. They got back into their rhythm and they stuck to the game plan. I thought generally, you know, I think you can put that down to being the sort of first game and nervousness and whatnot, but I think they've clearly got a plan. We said on the show last week we were hoping that because they'd had such a short amount of time to work with Roy Hodgson, the plan's going to be very clear and they're going to have to stay with it and not deviate from it. And it looks like that's what's happening.
And it's an English system.
And also, as time goes on, the confidence comes from the sort of how well the system works.
That's right.
If Hodgson, a lot of the way Hodgson will get his confidence and get the players' sort of trust as well will be, look, after four or five games, competitive games, if we're lucky at this tournament, look, the system works. You can see it works.
And they'll become more comfortable and they'll be able to express themselves within it.
Exactly.
And if you take those positives into the Sweden game, it's not going to be as hot in Kiev. It's about 5 or 6, maybe 7 degrees.
And it's an evening
cooler.
Game.
It's an evening game. And Sweden aren't France. Sweden have got a dangerous player.
Yeah, they
can hurt us, but they're no France. You know, so there's a lot of positives to be taken. You get, as Gerard said in this post match interview, if you go 4 points after two games, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So a lot of positives and whatnot. And Roy seems, he's very relaxed in the role, very assured, and it gives me a lot of assurance as well see a good bloke in charge of England who looks as though he's got a plan.
I'm loving the realistic expectations around England. We've campaigned for it for years and it's happening.
I sort of wonder whether France really knew too much about how to break us down. I think they saw the two banks of four. Well, actually, realistically, it was the four and then the two and occasionally the wingers touched.
That's
it,
right,
But France almost sort of seemed to think, well, what do we do with this? You know, I don't remember them having too many shots from long range. No. They didn't resort to that.
Well, no, they had a couple. Yeah. Like Joe Hart made a couple of simple saves. Yeah, but they were more speculative.
If you can restrict the likes of Benzema and Ribéry to 25, 30-yard shots, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get chances. You can't play a 90-minute match against a top side with great players and not expect them to have anything.
Yeah.
And nobody dived in the 18-yard box, which is, you know, we've found ourselves on the back foot due to stuff
that's
like that.
That's right. And we've still got Rooney to come back.
Exactly. Milner cheated as well, which I've been campaigning for.
What was that? When he wasn't fouled, but he stayed down. Yeah, so
just
the French
having a look to see if the ref was going to give it.
The bush gets, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
And England hadn't put out the ball for France previously, so France were.
I felt really sorry for Milner because he put a shift in.
Yeah,
he really did. Workhorse. Time the subs ball went up, he was looking over the last sub. He was like, "I don't believe. Come on,
what have I got to do to earn my substitution?"
Yeah. He worked like a builder, didn't
he?
He did.
He's having a pint of Strongbow right now.
He's got his high vis on
like
still.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, for the next England game, we'll be there.
We're going to Sweden
in Kiev.
BBC aren't going.
No.
We are.
We are filling in for them unofficially.
So perhaps think about giving us your licence.
We could do Doctor Who.
Indeed. Our positive start for England then.
Yes,
we're all
happy
there. It's a platform. And we're all about platforms. Now, let's go back to day one of the championships in Group A, where Poland entertained Greece. What a great game it was kick off the tournament,
really.
I personally think. I mean, it was goals, sendings off, a penalty miss.
It was a lot of fun.
Usually the opening day of a championship, you know, or the opening game rather, is a little bit of a damp
drab,
squid.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Not that
a
one.
Damp squid.
Squids are often damp because they're in the sea.
Yeah, they need to be.
Well, Luke sort of said last week that, you know, at the start of every tournament, they always you have three or four games where the referee cracks down, and he most certainly cracked down.
Yeah. Bloody Nora. Papas the Topopolis.
That'll do.
Forgive me. Or
David Acropolis.
I've resorted to using his Socrates first name.
Socrates, we'll call him.
The Greek man, I'm going with.
Yeah,
that referee, the Spaniard, he's dished out so many cards in the league.
I would like to suggest that Socrates didn't even commit a foul, let alone get a booking.
You've gone further than me, because I was perfectly willing to come on this show and say the first one wasn't even a foul.
Yeah, no.
Definitely not.
Absolutely.
And the second
not.
One you've seen not given this foul before.
Yeah. But two bookings and he's away.
It made me worry it was going to be like the World Cup, where people were going to be getting yellow cards and eventually getting sent off for all kinds of stupid stuff, but it's died down since then, which is a good thing. I mean, the red card for Szczesny in the same game was utterly deserved.
Not even Szczesny can play.
Poland started very, very lively. And Lewandowski scored, which didn't surprise any of us, of course, with the great season he's had with Dortmund, as I'm sure you've heard 1,001 times. And he headed it down, Jim.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Textbook.
I think Halkias, who I've seen play at Portsmouth, I think he played about 6 or 7 games for Portsmouth, and he was dreadful. His debut was in the South Coast Derby against Southampton, and he was shocking. I couldn't believe.
Positioning was just like,
made it so easy for Lewandowski. Yeah. A striker of that quality will lap that up all day.
Yeah.
And I'd like to single Poland out for special credit, actually, because it's a massive deal for them. It's the first time I've posted the tournament. They're on display in front of the world. They want to put a good impression across, and they're under, I think, probably quite crippling pressure against a team that weren't fancy to do anything at all. They didn't get a win, but they played well. I thought Lewandowski played well. I thought Blazikowski played well too, as did Obraniak.
They did play well, but I think the problem they have is that they don't look like they suit having the upper hand. They're a team that are very much used to playing on the back foot and sort of trying to get stuff out of games, and when they were on top against Greece, they didn't really know how to capitalise on it. They made some sloppy, rash decisions
they
gone
in
a lot
two
of the time. But
they
let Greece back in.
But I mean, 1-0 at half time, Greece are down to 10 men. Poland must have thought, brilliant, this is a vital 3 points.
Yeah.
And then came on Salpingidis.
Oh, God.
For the Greeks, who had a wonderful afternoon.
He was at the centre of everything good Greece did. I couldn't believe. I don't know that much about him.
No.
I think he plays for PIOK, but he was at the centre of everything they did well. He won the penalty.
He scored the goal.
A goal disallowed, rightly. Yeah. But
The goal was. Oh, sorry, rather. The penalty was a great move from the Greeks. I mean, Salpingidis. He made a great run. I think it was him who played it back to the midfielder. Popped it over, lovely. Mm. And Szczesny's come out, and they forced him into that foul. Mm. And it was superb play from the Greeks.
It was very similar to what happened to David James in the Euro 2004 against France, where he had to make the fouls. Nothing he could do.
That's right.
He couldn't stop himself. But Salpingidis just ticked all the entertainment boxes, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
Looks like Louis Spence. what do you want?
Yeah, but he had a great time. But you know, 1-0 down and down to 10 men, you could have never have seen Greece doing that. And people have slagged him off and said, "Oh, blimey, they're boring defensive and all the rest of it." Full credit to them in that game. They really took it to the polls.
I hope Spence and Gidis starts in the next game, because he's certainly earned that.
We said this before, and we'll probably come on to mention it with Ireland shortly. When you set your team up like that, as Greece always do, it's a 4-3-3, isn't it? But they pack the box.
4-5-1.
Pretty much. When you go a goal down, it's almost like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Because you've almost played for a 0-0 and hope you can nick.
Well, you bring on Louis Spence.
Who'd have thought that would be the answer?
Other managers around the world are like, I wish I thought of that.
I thought the Polish fans were exceptional as well. Yeah. So loud. Just it was good. The atmosphere was electric. And there's been some odd atmospheres in the grounds as well. Again, I'm sure we'll come on to.
And Szczesny, I did find it. I like that moment where he knows he's off. He just sort of went, yeah. And he actually patted, Salpingidis on the back and was like, yeah, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
And then on come Titonier and saved the day.
Yeah,
his name's spelt Titan in English.
Yeah, I know.
But
it's
not pronounced that.
He was a Titan. Carragunas sort of pulled rank, didn't he, on Salpingidis. I thought Salpingidis should have taken it. Yeah. I don't know if Carragunas is the penalty taker.
Well, he's their most experienced player by a long, long way, isn't he? I would imagine that he is.
He's got extra experience at missing penalties now.
Indeed. Yeah,
it's a nice height for the goalkeeper as well.
But, you know, Poland will be slightly worried because...
Mark Bright thought it was a good penalty. I think Mark Bright's a knob.
Yeah.
Well, it was in the corner.
I think it sounded right to you, but it didn't go in, did it? Which is the main sort of barometer for a good penalty.
Anyway, the Poles might be quite worried because that really is 2 points dropped. And they've got the mighty Russians in the next game.
And they were emphatic.
Yeah. 4-1 against the Czech Republic. They looked good, especially on the break.
Yeah.
I mean they broke.
It's quick.
Yeah.
And they seem to exploit space like no other
they
team
did.
I've seen in the first round of games.
And
they
can be fair though, the Czechs are not the team they've been in the past. It's not
4-1.
I know it's 4-1, but I think Poland, you know, will have a decent chance against the Czech Republic, to be
true,
honest.
True, but think of the chances that Kurzakov missed on his own. I've never seen such a banana footed player.
They flew out the traps. It was like they couldn't wait to get started. And their movement was sensational, I thought. They would give, I know it's not a big shout, but they would give a lot of teams problems with that movement.
Yeah,
you know, going forward, they're irresistible.
On the break.
Yeah.
Well, James Appel has been tipping Dzhigoyev to be something special for quite a while.
Already got a brace.
As his one to watch for the tournament, and immediately proven right what a player he is.
The thing I liked about him is that he's obviously shown promise in the past, and this is probably the big stage where he's going to mature, but it means so much to him.
How
much he loved it when he
second goal in particular.
Yeah, he couldn't believe his life. Loving it.
I think he was probably saying that's how you bloody put it away, because Kurzakov missed so many, didn't he?
And Pavlyuchenko's goal was a great individual,
lovely one.
Well.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing though, if he'd missed that, you'd be absolutely furious with him. That was a proper sort of selfish FIFA goal.
Yeah.
And as we said, Ashavin had a great game as well.
He did. Prick.
Well, Pavlyuchenko's goal was like, we're 3-1 up, let me do what I want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, let me have one.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, Pilar was it for the Czechs?
Yeah, that was a great goal.
It was a lovely little tuck and finish, wasn't it? But not enough, not nearly enough.
It was a boob job of a goal.
It was. But I mean, Russia, if we assume, and it may be wrong to assume at this stage, but if they do win the group, they're going to face a difficult game in the quarterfinal. That'll be delish.
Yeah.
But who did they play? Who did they play last time in the quarterfinals? It was Holland, wasn't it?
It was. Was that Group B you're talking about?
It is Group B.
Well, let's go there.
Yeah.
Because the Danes have, in the words of, was it Jonathan Pearce? Or was it one of the commentators?
The greatest upset in the history of the universe.
Yeah. Even the Danish manager was like, we're eighth in the world. Yeah. Is it eighth or ninth?
They're ninth.
They're top ten.
Yeah.
They are top ten.
And they won their qualifying group.
It's not that much.
Above Portugal.
Yeah.
They've won this competition before.
Exactly.
Not that long ago.
Exactly. Yeah. It is an upset. But
and Nicholas Bentner plays for them.
Yeah. So they're bound to get something. But yeah, Crondelli with the only goal of the game.
One of the things I love about the Euros is players like Crondelli, who I'd never heard of,
just
popping up and doing something brilliant.
That's right.
And you'll always remember him now.
Yeah, like absolutely.
A pub quiz question, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which Cron? Holland started with a front four, Schneider behind Van Persie, Robin and Affalay. On the wings. And they had 28 attempts at goal.
Yeah, it was like someone had put a curse on them.
He really
in front
was.
Of goal. It was absolutely ludicrous.
The Dutch will be pig sick because They should have won the game. There's no doubt about that. And that's the kind of game. You win that, you go into the Germany game thinking, have we got a point? We're still on, yeah. Very much, yeah. Going into the Portuguese game. Even if we lose against the Germans, they lose against Germany, they're out.
Yeah.
Is it not?
Yeah, you will have
you know, unless there's yeah. an incredible, I think yeah, that's yeah, probably yeah, the case. Yeah. You know, normally you lose two games and that's you out. And really, I mean, you would be so frustrated as a Dutch fan, wouldn't you?
Mm.
I thought Schneider played well. I thought he'd be, it's probably the best I've seen him play for a while.
I thought I played well as well. I mean,
I didn't think he was getting any penetration. Mm. I thought he's been quite frustrating. He was getting on the ball quite a lot, but I don't think he really sort of delivered as well as I've seen him in the past. But that said, he has been out injured, hasn't he? Yeah. And all sorts of time off.
I mean, Van Persie had a couple of absolute shockers in front of goal. His control was woeful. And Huntelaar towards the end as well missed a really good chance.
So
I mean, there's been a lot of call in Holland for Huntelaar to start ahead of Van Persie. Now imagine that's what they'll do, because you know there is no time to lose now,
and they won't drop Schneider because politically apparently that's just suicide for the manager.
Yeah, but he's a class player as well.
You can't rely on penalties all the time. They've got enough class to put that team away.
Van Marwijk was angry the Dutch weren't given a penalty. He said what made this defeat unacceptable was that we were not given a 1000% clear penalty.
1000%.
I would say
it was a penalty.
Yeah, it was a penalty, but I would think Van Marwijk's probably taken the heat off his own players there. But at the end of the game, I mean, the Danes looked quite comfortable. I mean, there was a couple of times where I thought, hold it in the corner, and they never. Mm. You know, and they were knocking the ball about quite well. You know, Denmark, they played well. We can't take that away from them.
They soaked up the pressure well, I thought.
They did. But
they conceded 20 attempts.
Well, yeah, true. But, I mean, at the end of the game, Holland had, of course, you know, Schneider and Van Persie on the pitch. You know, Huntelaar, Van der Vaart, Dirk Kuyt as well. And the trouble was, they had a flipping front six or whatever it was.
Robin hit the post as well, didn't he?
He did in the first half. But they had so many on that when Denmark came out of defence with the ball, there was only old Van Bommel there.
Yeah.
They had so much room to take the pressure off themselves. Van Bommel got a booking, of course, didn't he?
Yeah, of course. He gets one when he starts.
That's right.
There's been talk that after World Cup 2010, that people are saying, I haven't seen enough of them to sort of justify this, but people are saying that he shouldn't play with two holders. He should play with one holder.
Yeah.
Probably De Jong. Move Van Bommel on because he's old now.
It's a waste of the attacking talent they've got.
I think that's probably true.
So who would you have there? Maybe Van der Vaart in with Schneider?
Yeah,
or is that a
Van
bit
der Vaart
too...
played a lot in qualifying, didn't he? I think that... one thing is for absolute certain, that next game against Germany is going to be a humdinger. They've got to win.
Yeah.
Well, at the very least, they've got to not lose it.
Well, I tell you what, if they're 2-0 down with 20 minutes to go,
red cards are plenty.
Do you know what I mean?
Get your in-play red card bets.
It's going to be a war.
Yeah,
that's crazy though, to think the Dutch could go out in the next game.
Yeah, it is. I mean, looking back at Denmark again as well, I think Christian Eriksen was very well marshalled out of the game, but he was disappointing really. Hopefully we'll see a bit more of him in the competition as it goes through.
I think a lot of these players, fine, I mean, especially if they're young, and actually Oxlade-Chamberlain said it in the post-match interview, they're used to having a bit of space and they come up against really sort of experienced, hard-nosed international players
everywhere you look
at this tournament, and they don't get hardly any time.
Yeah,
and they're not used to it. And I think as young players, I mean, rarely you have a few that don't, like Rooney was a good example, but generally they need time to develop and sort of experience of finding space for themselves. You know?
It's a completely different set of circumstances, isn't it, which you have to once again get used to and gain that experience within.
Mm. And also, I mean, Eriksen's going to a team who aren't really fancied. They haven't got an amazing amount of quality around him like he's used to at Ajax. So
they could go through though. Next round games, Portugal's a wonderful game.
Very, very strange atmosphere at the game, because it was another one that was only about 2/3 full. I mean, there was an entire side, one of the sort of bigger sides at the widthways of the pitch, where there was just no one in it.
Absolutely well supported sides.
Yes.
Well, you were saying, Jimmy, you didn't think the atmosphere was good enough for the game that we saw.
Yeah, it made the game seem like it was duller than it actually was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know,
it was a visibly good game that no one seemed to be getting excited about. It was made for a very strange atmosphere.
I just love the way that how the whole competition has begun, and how international competitions, no matter what happens, they always wrong foot or put on the back foot sponsors, because you know the Dutch have been all over this Italian stuff. We've been seeing player after player after player, and it's just like, aha, Denmark has beat you.
Hummel have beaten Nike.
Speaking of sponsors, you know, obviously McDonald's are the official sponsor. I've seen like photos of Burger King logos.
Yeah,
it's the same Burger King in the middle of the logo. It says, "We can't show our logo 100 metres this way."
Brilliant.
Because the sign is so recognisable.
But you all know what it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's also worth pointing out that Jetro Willems for Holland started and became the youngest player ever to play at the championships, beating Enzo Schifo's record set in 1984.
If he can have a career like Schifo did, he'd be loving it.
Like Jethro.
Yeah, I thought he did okay. Will the Germans put out the Dutch in the next round?
That's a big question. They will be so keen to do that, won't they?
Because such a typical German thing to imagine. See that, Holland.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Germany, who beat Portugal 1-0. Mario Gomez with a header. Do you know what? Dare I say, I thought Portugal deserved probably at least a point.
That Varela miss.
I thought Portugal edged it.
No, I don't think they did. They didn't get a goal.
I think the last ten, last twenty, where they just sort of went, we need to do something here.
Yeah, exactly. I thought they set up for a draw, which is absolute suicide in that group.
They look really apart from the goal. They look really comfortable. Germany never created anything.
No, but Portugal didn't create anything, did they?
I don't think they did. I mean, Pepe hit the underside of the bar just before the first
half. Great first touch. One of the best first touch I've ever seen in the
centre back.
Yeah,
Brazilian doesn't count. Yeah, you know my thoughts on this.
Varela, of course, at the end. Nani had a couple of shots blocked. They hit the bar again in the second half.
You're going to have shots blocked against the team like Germany.
I don't think they went out to try and win the game enough to deserve anything from it.
Well, if you try that against Germany, you're going to get punished.
Let me lighten the mood by saying that Cristiano Ronaldo had another tantrum.
Yeah. I thought Ronaldo actually worked his bollocks off and really deserved more from his teammates.
He was isolated, you know.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he thought that as well. I stormed down the tunnel.
The problem Portugal have is there's too great a disparity between their sort of really good players and their kind of players that are maybe a little bit lucky to be in that
boilerplate
side. Yeah, they've got a lot of kind of workmanlike players in there, which doesn't suit the style they're trying to play. Postiga's a great example. Yeah.
Do you not just think it's a lot simpler than that? They just need a good quality striker.
Well, and when
Nelson Oliveira came out, he looked really bright. Yeah. But I mean, it's probably come too soon for
very, very inexperienced.
You have to go back to Eusebio.
Is there not an,
get him back?
Is there not an argument to even play Ronaldo up front? He scores so many goals. He's obviously got that in his locker.
But I also think that. That's probably a question that's been broached by Paulo Bento, and Ronaldo said, no, I don't want to do it. And the other thing Paulo Bento's done, don't forget, there's players around that, you know, aren't maybe of great quality. He's fallen out with Carvalho and fallen out of Bosingua, and they don't want to be selected. Bosingua's not the player he was, but he's a Champions League winner twice over, and Carvalho's excellent on his day.
Yeah.
And that's a factor.
But having said that, I thought defensively they looked solid. And actually, Andy Brassel, European football journalist and friend of the Ramble, you know, he's in the Portuguese camp at the moment, and he said
they don't know he's there. he's in an air duct, I've blown his cover.
Yeah.
He said, you know, that I don't think the Portuguese could have envisaged the game going any better.
Really?
That's what he thought. Yeah. You know, and I honestly thought they deserved a point and they could have nicked it. And had they have maybe gone at Germany. I mean, Germany's midfield consisted of Kadira, Schweinsteiger, Müller, Özil, and Podolski. That is decent.
Yeah.
And yet Portugal, I thought, looked a bit better in possession.
Yeah.
Germany didn't create much, but they still won.
I don't think they did enough with it. It's meaningless when, you know.
But the thing is, though, mate,
it's not meaningless if you take the pressure off your defence.
Think of the margins, though. Put it another way. If Pepe's goal, which bounced on the line, goes in, that's 1-0, and you go, that's a brilliant draw for Portugal.
No, 1-0.
Well, I assume the game finished 1-0.
Well, okay.
But what I was going to say was that Varela had that chance.
Yeah.
That if he had a bit of composure, maybe a bit more experience, he'd have taken a touch there, and they would have bombed past him, and he'd have slotted it into an open net. But Portugal will see the Denmark game and say, okay, Denmark got a good result, but we can still beat them.
Yeah.
And now they'll take great heart from Holland losing as well, so they've got a decent chance.
They do. Well, yeah, absolutely. I thought Fabio Coentrão had a good game.
Yeah, he did.
I think he's an excellent fullback.
He's just decent, yeah.
He really is. And what I think's great about Coentrão is, you know, if you play Ronaldo, I mean, he's not in front of him per se, because Ronaldo's going to roam, isn't he? But he does free that kind of flank up, doesn't he?
Well, there's a Dani Alves quality to him, where he'll play a side of the pitch rather than a sort of position with on it.
Well, at one point, like, Mourinho was playing him in, like, midfield, wasn't he, for Madrid?
Yeah, which was probably
strange.
Yeah.
But I think he's done very well, given that he's playing in quite close proximity to the most terrifying man in the world, Bruno Alves.
Yeah.
Who looks like if he made a mistake, he'll eat your heart.
Absolutely. Alves and Pepe at the centre-back. No wonder they didn't create it. I'm not going near them. We'll take a point, you know. But Gomez had other ideas, and that is it, is for Germany, isn't it? They don't create anything, blah, 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 they've won 1-0.
The thing about Gomez is, you switch off for 10 seconds against Gomez, he gets a chance of score. And he'll be deceptively sort of quiet, won't he, over and over again, and any chance he'll just put it away.
Didn't in the Champions League final, did he?
that's probably but how many other goals did he score?
Yeah, no, fair enough.
He's not doing it with a false sense of security. I just saw you on telly like a couple of weeks ago being a bit gash, to be honest.
Being Crispin Glover from Back to the Future.
The German FA have been handed a disciplinary by UEFA due to their fans throwing missiles, or paper, as most people call it, one of the Portuguese players taking a corner.
Did you see Russia? See their fans? They're throwing missiles.
Croatia?
Their fists.
Yeah. Yeah. Croatian missiles were tables.
And chairs.
Yeah. I thought it was a bit harsh, a few fans throwing... I mean, you obviously don't want them throwing bits of paper, but...
Do you reckon...
They're always cracking down on the right things, aren't they?
Do you reckon that the...
was written on the paper?
Sorry, did somebody just do a blow-off? Right.
Yeah, that is it. Yeah.
Charge.
2-year ban. Good to see Croatian fans channeling the spirit of Charleroi, isn't it?
Yeah.
Using the old patio furniture. The weapon of choice.
Right then. Well, let's go on to Group C where the Croatians are. But we've got to talk about Italy versus Spain first and foremost. For my money, the game of the tournament so far.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of fun.
Let's talk about the Italians. 3-5-2, libero, wing backs, Pirlo. Oh. Balotelli and Cassano up front.
Sven managing.
They're my first team now. I thought they were great. First half, got the better of it against Spain, would you say?
They look really mobile. They look a hell of a lot more mobile than Spain. And Spain are one of those ones where they do use the space more effectively and they do sort of support one another. But they just look... The Italians look quicker and... a quick Italian side. I mean, come on.
But I think that Maggio was excellent. I thought he really dominated.
Well, Giacarini.
Yeah, Giacarini was good as well.
Making his debut.
I know.
Now, he's normally...
He's 5'2" as well.
He's normally an attacking midfielder. So, and making his debut as a wing back
against Spain.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful performance. That is absolutely top work from him.
PK versus Balotelli for me was just a lot of fun.
Wasn't it? At one point, when Balotelli punched the ground, I thought, if PK had rolled over there, his fist would have gone through him.
That would be dead. I think PK will be blissfully unaware for the rest of his life how close to death he is.
Luke, you want to talk about De Rossi?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as I mentioned a bit at the top of the show, he's it was just great to see him there. I was just thinking at one point during the beginning of that game, the amount of quality they've got at the back is obscene because Pirlo was dropping so deep.
And they've had a couple of injuries as well.
More than a couple. Yeah, and I thought they were excellent at the back.
It's an unusual system, isn't it? I think it took the Spanish a while to get their heads around it.
I still think
the Spanish system wasn't.
Equally unconventional.
It was
two midfields just battling each other at the top. It's really
Craig
strange.
Craig Levine-esque, as everyone's been saying.
Trailblazer.
Had to be said.
I still think the Spain thing, it's funny how, like, so Italy have had a lot of injuries and they're playing against the world champions and the European champions. So I think we'll try something a bit different, you know. Mm. And I applaud them for that. But Spain have got absolutely no excuse for playing those strikers. I don't understand the point of it.
Very weird. Yeah.
They've got Llorente, who's unequivocally one of Europe's best strikers. And the whole possession versus penetration balance, I just don't get right.
Well, the substitute started really with Di Natale coming on.
Mm. Tiny Christmas.
And Pirlo, who'd been great, and they're playing some lovely diagonals. And again, as you say, exploiting the width. I mean, Spain probably could have doubled up on Italy down the flanks, but it seemed like the Italians had all the room.
Mm.
But Pirlo just broke through, didn't he, of that midfield line and thought, yeah, all right then.
Slips.
And then Di Natale went, I see what you're doing.
Mm.
I've seen the ball.
Yeah.
I've opened up my body.
And he slipped him through. And it was
Dinks,
marvellous.
Dinks.
Marvellous attacking.
Pause at that point.
Play.
I'd have put my house on him.
He goes, opens the body, waits for Casillas to just drop to his knees and flicks it into the corner last minute. That is absolutely magnificent.
Beautiful.
Di Natale is just he loves goals so much. He's almost like he was quite pleased when Spain scored. He thought, right, I've got to score another one now. Brilliant.
Can you suggest a quicker 34-year-old, as we said before?
I think he's the quickest 34-year-old in world football until next month when Dennis Romadal turns 34.
Oh yeah. The Rom.
Only
a few minutes later, Spain woke up
as a long-term football fan, do you not get frustrated by Spain? The personnel they've got available to
them. I thought you were going to say, as a striker yourself.
But I just think the amount of striking quality they've got on.
Of course,
It's a strange decision.
You've not got a striker on the pitch.
When Torres came on, obviously Torres missed a few chances, but he gave him a more sort of natural option, and their play was better for it.
Well, he gave them a footballer who gets to stand nearer to the goalkeeper, which is half the struggle, it seems, most of the time. I mean, you know, he was one on one a couple of times and he muffed it up a couple of times.
It's like they'd lost a bet.
But the fact that Torres missed the chance is to miss the point. The point is, when Torres came on, they got a load more chances.
Yeah, of course.
And if they had made the right substitution, which would have been Llorente, in my opinion, they'd have won that game 3-1, probably.
Well, they finished the stronger. I mean, we talk about the Italians, you know, all day long, but they did finish the stronger.
Those teams will both be pleased to get that game out of the way.
Yeah, I think so. I think a point did them both. And the Spanish, they showed you why they are European and world champions, because they're playing against a very, very difficult and organised Italian side with a lot of quality. go a goal down, right, come on, fags out, let's go to work. A few minutes later, they got a lovely equaliser, and they capitalised on one of Italy's mistakes, because it was a ball from the back that was kind of overhit, and Pirlo looked around as if to say, what are you doing, you know, lovely bit of passing, boof, and it was one on.
But does it not mean now that they've both Italy and Spain have got to put Croatia to the sword?
Yeah.
Well, it depends, doesn't it? I mean,
It could work out where, I mean, without being disrespectful to Ireland, which we'll come on to in a minute, it could just be a fact of who beats Ireland by the most amount.
Yeah.
Presuming that Croatia carry on the way they have been, which may not happen anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Spain will be too worried. Who would they get from, assuming they go through?
Oh, they're not going to fear anyone.
They're not going to worry who they get from England and France and Ukraine and Sweden.
I don't think
the Italians would worry too much either. Maybe the Italians would probably prefer not to play the French. But we're talking about that, you know, they're already through when Croatia beat Ireland 3-1.
Conversely, I would also say that England would have the same mindset. You know, Roy Hodgson is a very level-headed manager. I don't think anybody's going, oh my God, who are we going to get? You've got to get there first.
I thought you were going to say, England aren't worried who they're going to get. I was like, oh, I am. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's a point, and we'll see what happens. Croatia beat Ireland 3-1. The one thing the Irish did get right was their players were wearing 1-11.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, and their fans, I know that to be, I don't want to sound patronising or cliche, but their fans were amazing.
But it is a good point, because, you know, England, there were empty seats in Donetsk, and that's, I wouldn't blame the English for that. I think that's the setup on one thing or another. You said, you know, Holland, Denmark, Ireland, that end was absolutely packed to the rafters,
and they were bouncing
and they were in great voice all the way through. You know, even, I mean, you know, Croatia beat them quite soundly, and you know,
but they had their chances though. For me, they had a couple of shots on goal. I thought, well, you know, either side of the goalkeeper, and obviously that's a goal. But you know,
I think you're right, Pete. I think it's frustrating for them as far as going forward. They had chances. They should have had a penalty. Probably they had chances. But when you sat out like that, you don't do the basics. No. Like, oh, every single one of those goals was an absolute gift.
Oh, what a soft header!
It's frustrating for them.
Yeah, the most frustrating thing from the Irish point of view must be whoever that crazy person with the whistle was in the crowd. What on earth was that about?
Yeah.
You see that at the game? Someone blew a whistle as the ball came in for Croatia's first goal, and everyone seemed to hesitate for a moment, and that seemed to be enough to put Given off. And just I thought the goal had been disallowed. Which was obviously the point
Saint
of that
Ledger's
whistle.
Goal.
But exactly the same thing happened for St Ledger's goal. Really odd.
I should play to the whistle. Oh, that doesn't work. Mandzukic is a confusing player, because I've seen him play as like a traditional playmaker before, and I've really enjoyed watching him. But then he turns up for Croatia against Ireland, works really hard, which you don't like to see a playmaker doing, and he scores two headers. It's like, when's the last time he's got two headers?
Nah, it was a given own goal.
Someone says on Twitter, let me credit them. It was Jesus Chingley. He said, was Shea Given's header the best of the tournament so far?
I just like, as cruel, he turned, he's like, oh, he's got that goal, and then he looks up and he's got a hilarious amount of white chalk on his nose and mouth.
Yeah. I'd like to have seen the Croatian celebration go up and just like point at him like laughing.
Jelovic, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
Talked about him.
But what a gift again.
They did that thing, it was one of those fluffed clearances that England did a couple of times, you know, in 86 when Maradona got the handball, and then in 88 when Houghton scored, that kind of boot up in the air, but you're kind of playing the man in
the wrong way.
But that they didn't get enough loft on it.
Jelovic as well. He's one of the most one-touch strikers I've ever seen.
He will lap that sort of stuff up all day. It doesn't matter who the keeper is. It doesn't matter what the game is. He lives for those sort of chances, and I think he's one of those sort of strikers. I mean, I saw him play for Everton against Liverpool in the Cup semi-final, and he put such a shift in. He's a sort of striker, almost like Ian Wright back in the day. He will chase down 150 lost causes, and the 151st, he'll get a goal and he'll be delighted.
Yeah.
You know, he won't complain, he'll just run himself into the ground.
And that is all about attitude. Obviously, work rate and ability, but your attitude's there. And one thing we didn't say about Italy-Spain, you know, you couldn't see someone like Balotelli doing that, and when he got his chance, he just strode up to the goal. Yeah, go on then, I'll do it. Oh, what?
He just never decided what to do.
Sergio Ramos is not the quickest. I mean, he's obviously a quality player.
That's a brilliant tackle from Ramos. That's why he risked a penalty and a sending off there.
Balotelli led him
back. Should have given him the chance, or should he?
Absolutely.
He was trying to back heel it. He's thinking back heel it.
Do you think, I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear from Irish fans. I mean, I know that Trapattoni's sort of ultra defensive model has got them to the tournament, and I imagine, you know, you'd be grateful for that. But I thought he was, you know, when you're chasing a game, it's a three game, pretty rapid fire tournament set up. You know, you're losing the game 3-1. you know, you might.
And it was early in the second half.
Yeah, there was enough time to get back into it, and he didn't really seem to. I would have put McLean on. I'd have put him on to stretch the play. And really, and you know what? Give Croatia something to think about.
Well, he eventually brought John Walters and Simon Cox and Shane Long on.
I thought Cox. I know people will say that Cox was great. I think he was quite poor. I think he was too pumped up. He gave away too many free kicks. He was all over the place. Really, I thought he was way too pumped up.
No, you're right. You know, I mean, obviously Robbie Keane came off, so it wasn't quite the. The kind of go for it spirit that perhaps needed, and as you say, it's 3-1 down, and they didn't look like they would play their way back into the game. So you think, right, let's just go for broke here.
Well, bring Gibson on; he can hold the ball.
Yeah,
and he's not the greatest player in the world, Gibson, but he hold the ball up and he can pass it.
Yeah,
you know, and that gives
he's
you
got a bad shot on him as well.
Yeah,
if
exactly.
If you get the chance, but it's a shame.
I will make the chance.
Yeah, it's a shame for Ireland, and you worry for him, don't you? With
Spain and Italy coming up. Yeah.
Are you fit for
them? But to be fair, Italy have generally struggled against Ireland in tournaments. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, there's not a huge deal of logic to that.
But let's be honest, if Ireland got a point against Italy, it would be a great result.
Yeah, of course.
And then they've
got
to go and beat Spain.
Yeah.
I just think it's so annoying.
Keep believing.
Yeah.
It's so annoying, the fact that Ireland are genuinely, I've seen them playing qualifying a few times, they're so solid at the back.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who they play to a certain extent, they'll do fine because they're never conceding.
Their game plan just went out of the window, didn't it? With such
just for individual mistakes,
bizarre early goal.
I think it was maybe Barry Glendinning said, you know, Ireland. Forget who it was, but someone said that Ireland would have preferred Spain or Italy to start with.
Yeah, of course.
Just get out of the way.
Exactly.
And also you find your level.
You massively play for a draw as well. You know, you restrict them from playing, etc., etc. Against Croatia, it's kind of like you start off with a game that you perhaps think you can win, you've got to change your style and you've got to go for it. And if
also,
you lose that game, you're massively on the back foot.
Because it makes it must win. If you've got those two absolute giants coming up, I mean, Croatia are clearly a better team anyway. But it's the most favourable game first, which has obviously gone against them hugely.
Do you chaps think that Croatia could hurt Spain or Italy then? So they played okay.
Well, they did play well, yeah.
They deserve a bit of credit, I think.
They do, yeah. It would be interesting. You know, Italy have struggled against Croatia before.
If I'd be looking over to the bench and I saw a man in a suit and a dut, I'd be a little bit beanie hat on top.
Bilic is beanie.
I just think Bilic. I do like Bilic. I'm not going to slate him, but dig your top button up. You've got a suit and a tie on.
Do what you want. He's a rock star. He dresses how he likes.
It's true. It was a funny addition to his head, wasn't it? That beanie.
I don't do my top button up with a suit.
Yeah, I don't.
You can't
tie
with a t-shirt.
Don't even always tuck my shirt in, which I know you don't like. So.
Not when you're wearing a tie. Come on, Marcus. That's mad, isn't it?
When he's on stage, though.
Yeah. Dishevelled man.
You didn't
in
moan
suit,
when the Strokes nothing. Did it, did you?
oh, he's all gone quiet.
Yeah, and I am comparing Jim to Julian Casablanca. You having that one, Jim?
Yeah.
Of course he is.
Put it in a way that I can put it on a flyer.
Yeah.
You know, I go back to Croatia. I don't think they'll fear Spain or Italy. I just don't think they're set up like that. They're there on an adventure, aren't they? That's Bilic has very much got them to enjoying their football, enjoying the fact they're there, and they're going to be very, very sort of thrilling encounters, I think, those games.
Let's not forget that once they get going, they explode.
That's true. that's it. I mean, if you'd have given Croatia 3 points, 3 goals, plus 2 goal average going into Italy, Spain, they'd take that.
Every day of the week, twice.
Every day of the week. Bilic and his beanie, they'd have liked what they saw. They, as if the beanie's got a personality of its own.
I'd like to see Hodgson stick a beanie on. Yeah. Not today, it was too hot. But when I get to Kiev, it's a bit cooler.
That's true. Now then, that kind of wraps up the first round of games.
Right, but don't worry, there are
Michael
loads.
Michael Griss hair transplant, is that what we're going on to?
No. I was unaware of that, though,
no.
To be fair. At the time of recording, Ukraine and Sweden hasn't finished, so we can't talk about that, but obviously we're going out to Kiev tomorrow, so we will be talking about the next round of games from there. But so let's move on to another part of the world where there's still football being played.
I don't believe it.
We talk of tactics and 1-1s and 1-0s and all the rest of it, but all that was mere paper talk in New Jersey last week when Argentina played Brazil. I love this because even when the European Championships are going on, the South Americans are like, yeah, but we still have some of the limelight. Argentina 4, Brazil 3 was one of the games of the season. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Savagery.
And we're not even in a season in Europe at the moment.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. They're like, no, we'll have a bit, you know. Yeah, you find Europe. We're going to still do our stuff.
Yeah.
And it's going to be even better. But it was end-to-end, packed full of goodness. Nearly all the big boys were on show as well. Messi, Neymar, Mascherano, Di Maria, Hulk.
Brazil was quite young, though. It wasn't
Higuain.
Big. It wasn't the...
True, yeah. People would suggest
it was their Olympic squad, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Marcelo was in there, and as I say, Ulki or Hulk.
Marcelo got himself sent off, did he not?
Well, yeah, we'll come to that. Pato came on too.
Yeah.
I thought he was well, out for the next 11 years.
Permanently injured, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But there were lovely goals and slips aplenty. And Messi scored a hat-trick.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I know. Oh. I don't really think that sentence does it justice, really.
It's his second hat-trick in pretty quick succession for Argentina, isn't it?
He'll do that.
He's starting to do it for the national team. Yeah. It's mortifying.
I mean,
brilliant.
He doesn't do it in big games. He's playing Brazil, for crying out. A hat-trick against Brazil.
And
how many of you already scored this season?
Yeah, and in the New Jersey Sun.
The third goal was Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh, my goodness. 82 goals for club and country this season. Yeah. 82.
Not good enough.
Like I say, if you halved that, anybody would be over the ruddy moon. Yeah.
Career. A striker's career.
Yeah. Imagine that. If any English striker scored 42 goals in a season, or 41, sorry, is half of 82. Terrible.
Let's not exaggerate.
Yeah.
Stick him in that Ireland team.
Oh, I tell you. Yeah, so Brazil went one up and then Messi soon equalised. And there were two similar goals. You know when he slipped through and he's just like the flipping little hair? He just
like a greased hair.
Yeah, it just finishes so beautifully as well. And it's kind of like, yes.
To the point where he can do every type of finish to the extent where the goalkeeper has no clue what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not like the goalkeeper can study him and go, well, if he comes in one on one, he's going to do this.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what he's going to do.
He pulls a magic 8-ball out of his shorts and shakes it.
Yeah.
He goes, look, Cloudy, shake it again.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a dink. Dink.
Yeah. Slip it in the corner, round the keeper. Fine, no, don't bother me.
Don't score enough with your shoulders, Leo. You've got to work on this.
Yeah, he does. Oscar scored a nice one for Brazil, make it 2-2. Then Hulk actually put Brazil 3-2 up. Federico Fernandes made it 3. And then Messi, with 5 minutes from time, scored the goal of the game. And I loved that the commentator, as he came forward, he was like, Messi, they're backing off
like a horror film.
and the drama wasn't even finished there. The first 85 minutes gave us 7 goals, and then Lovetti came off the bench in the 87th minute and was sent off 3 minutes later for an incident with Marcello, who was also sent off. And then Lovetti did a bit of a Joey Barton before going off.
He went mad.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. He looks mad anyway. Not as mad as Pablo Guinatsu, though.
Guinatsu, he came on for Argentina. He's 34 in August and picked up his 7th cap.
Came on, straight off the set of From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah. Massively, in that bar. Yeah.
He looks like he'd kill you just by looking at you.
Yeah. 34 in August and his 7th cap.
Yeah.
That is Diego Maradona's selection.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's got to be one of the ones Diego called up.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely mates with Diego off the
you know, he looks like one of Diego's heavies.
Yeah,
he looks like a
gangbanger.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Right, that's all we got there from what happened in New Jersey. Should we have an email to finish?
Oh, go on then, let's have an email.
Go on.
Ramblers Assemble.
Oh, like we already have.
Yeah, so it's all good. After listening to your story about Kiev's deputy mayor telling people not to swim in the river, it reminded me of several things. When my parents moved to Kiev in 2008, one of the first things we were told was never to go in the river because the sand was full of radiation from Chernobyl.
fair.
Yeah, fair enough.
Thanks for that.
I also remembered a story about the mayor who, when Kiev's budget wasn't balancing, decided to charge people to visit the city's graveyards.
Bloody hell.
As you can imagine, this went down well. In the election a couple of years ago, this same mayor ran against one of the Klitschko brothers. Mental. And it's from Samir Jack Kadiolu.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much, Samir.
Hi, Tal.
Sent from his Android device, no less. Thanks for that.
Good Kiev River update.
Yeah.
We're going to be there. We're flying out there tomorrow, so Tuesday the 12th. Yeah. Mm. Next show you guys will get will be on the 14th. Which is Thursday.
People are still asking, aren't they?
Yeah. It's on the website. You can get the information on there when we're bringing shows out. And then we're going to the England Sweden game, which will be excellent.
Absolutely. But of course, if you want to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and the website, the new website, still new, I think. We can still keep having that.
Certainly a lot going on.
It's thefootballramble.com, and it's magnificent. Get over there. A lot of you haven't been getting over there. Get over there.
Yeah.
But a lot of you have, so thank you very much.
No excuse.
There's loads. I mean, honestly, I spent a good. Where I was at work, to be honest. Was a good hour just seeing what had been put on that day. There's cartoons, there's more pieces than you have any right to expect, sirs or madams.
Yeah. Mostly brilliant. Sirs.
Mainly sirs. Yeah.
You can always live in hope. Marvellous. Right, that's it for us this time. Say goodbye, Jim.
Bye!
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye, Marcus.
And it's goodbye from Luke too.
See you Thursday.
All right, gang. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.